Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, July 29th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Alphabet's Waymo unit plans on bringing its robo-taxi service to Dallas next year. We'll update the competition with Tesla and others in our next segment. But right now, if you're planning holiday travel this year, now's the time to act. That's because over the next month, we'll start to enter the Goldilocks window for booking flights. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator at JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her on YouTube at JetSetJuliet. You can also find her on X at JetSetJuliet. Juliet, thank you for joining us on the radio this afternoon. And one way you can beat the heat, 89 degrees right now in Chicago with a heat index of 100, over 100 today, is that you can fantasize about cooler conditions. You can fantasize about that chilly day in November when you're standing in line with all the other people at O'Hare waiting to go to some sort of holiday destination. But there is a way you can do it right, Juliet, without breaking the bank.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be the Grinch here, but the time to plan your holiday travel is yesterday. The time to book is yesterday. Well, the time to book is really right now. Obviously, the closer you get, the lower the inventory and the higher the prices. I mean, we all know that. Flights and hotels are booking up rapidly at this point. I just had an amazing room in Paris for my clients yesterday. I said, we got to book this now, like in the next few hours. And they waited till this morning and it was gone. So there are still deals, but they're going really quickly. So the headline here is figure out your plan, get everybody on the same page, and you got to book. And flights are like key. Obviously, if you're just traveling here within the United States, the best time to book is between 3 and 6 months out. And this is just in general. So you're cutting at close procrastinators, but you're not out of luck. You've got about until September, until things get really start, like the prices really start going like haywire. So it's time to book right now.
Now, Juliet, I need you to instill some confidence into the tremulous souls who, when they see a very good hotel room price or they see a very good flight, and the first inclination is, well, I'm going to sleep on it and wake up tomorrow, and if I still want this thing, I'm going to buy it. Your advice to that person?
My advice is you need to get your head checked because you're going to be spending a fortune. People are not stupid these days. You don't need me to tell you that the closer you get, the more expensive it's going to be, whether it's an accommodation or whether it's a flight. The general rule is when you're booking flights to try to book, there are certain windows. I got to tell you, I figured this out. I've done some studying. I know a lot of people are traveling internationally for the holidays. This is a general rule of international travel, so it doesn't just apply to holidays. The best time to book, I have found in my studies, is between 5 and 7 months out. And this is really interesting because here's why. Before that point, let's say 8 months to a year out, it's way too early to see what the demand is going to be. So the airlines, they throw out those really pricey, what we call anchor fares. This is pretty much taking advantage of the vulnerable. And what I mean by that is if you're booking a year out, you really want to be there or you really need to be there. And the airlines know this. And so they take advantage of this. Conversely, if you're booking 4 months out or less, like where we are kind of right now, the airlines know the demand by this point, and now they're going to price those remaining seats for maximum profit. So your best bet at this stage for the holiday travel is to book immediately. You really are at the point where you're just going to end up paying a lot of money. As far as accommodations go, rates are up there, especially in the hot cities here in the States and over in Europe. My husband and I, we had to cancel a trip that we were planning to England in September, and we were like hoping to reschedule for Christmas, but you know, it's just impossible. The hotels are at a premium, and all of those cute little inns and the castle hotels that we were looking at, they're booked up. So this kind of leads me to just a couple other things I want to mention, Rob, some hints and hacks. The closer you get to your trip, the more you should really consider booking the grand hotels rather than those adorable boutique hotels. The simple reason is because there's more inventory. Also, they may not be as beautiful, but you should consider booking business hotels. These are the ones that are in the city centers, financial districts, you know, by the airports. They're often begging for guests over the holidays, and you can get cheaper deals. Also, look at alternative airports here in the U.S. I mean, okay, it's super convenient, obviously, to fly into O'Hare, but it may be a lot cheaper if you perhaps flew into Milwaukee. So it's something to consider. And also, use price alerts. I'm a devotee. Rob, I don't know if you use Google Flights. That's like my thing. I love Google Flights. You just go in, you pick your routes, then you set an alert that'll let you know the second the price drops on that route, which is very, very helpful. And then finally, consider what I call the ringer destinations, like Morocco, for instance. Okay, it's this is a little obscure, but just hear me out. Morocco is like 9 miles across the Strait of Gibraltar from Spain. So you spend the pricey holidays in Morocco, which is an amazing place. It's got a European vibe. Then you just hop on a quick flight over to Europe a week later, and you're not dealing with these crazy prices. Or go to Greece and Portugal. They celebrate Christmas holidays in sort of a quieter, less commercial way, which means better hotel rates, more availability.
Juliette Huddy, thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Waymo, the autonomous driving technology owned by Google parent Alphabet, is accelerating its expansion and adding new cities as rivals pull back, leaving Tesla as one of the few still in the race. Joining us to break it all down is Jeff Gilbert, CBS automotive reporter in Detroit. Jeff, thanks for joining us today. And I think first off, the fact that Waymo is expanding is a sign of confidence on the part of Alphabet that they believe this technology works and has successfully passed the audition, because you could already you could see Waymo vehicles on the streets of San Francisco.
Yeah, you can see them on the streets of San Francisco, Austin, a number of other cities. Dallas, I think, is the newest one they're heading to. There are a lot of them. I believe they do about 250,000 rides a week. The big question is, can they make a profit on this long term? That's why traditional car makers dropped out. Of course, Waymo has a much bigger budget and much more ability to withstand a loss on a service like this. They don't break it down, but at this point, these are still very expensive vehicles to run.
And what is going to bring down the cost for Waymo? And this is clearly a part of it. Is it expanding into new cities and providing more opportunities for more customers?
Well, certainly expansion obviously brings it down. They're also partnering with Avis, which is going to do some of the infrastructure work, some of the work in getting the vehicles coordinated in some of these markets. So that could bring the cost down for them. But you've got Tesla nipping on their heels, and their system is not as expensive as Waymo's. Many people in the industry think it's not as good as well. Tesla has a system that uses cameras. Waymo uses LiDAR and other more expensive pieces of equipment. So we'll see how that competition plays out.
And then what is the safety angle on this particular service? Because I mentioned that Waymo is in service in San Francisco and has been in service in San Francisco for years. And that is a city, as far as the driving terrain is concerned, that puts human drivers through their paces. And it's clearly the technology has passed the audition on those hilly, winding streets out west. And what's the safety record of Waymo so far?
Well, so far their safety record has been good, but if you take a look at Cruise, GM's outfit, they had a good safety record until they had an accident, and then after that, everything kind of fell apart. So it only takes one really bad accident with a lot of publicity to cause a lot of problems. So far, we haven't seen that with Waymo.
And then with when it comes to making money, expansion is a part of it, but with Waymo and Alphabet, is the plan to be kind of like the Netflix of self-driving, where you're the first one out of the gate and then you sustain years of losses, and then just by virtue of being almost the last one standing, you get to take all the money?
Well, you know, you've seen that with other things. I mean, I think it took a long time for Uber to make money, but they kept pushing at it. So, you know, when you have money to put into a project, you can kind of withstand some of those early days where, again, somebody like a Ford or a General Motors can look at it and say, look, we're just not throwing more money after this. You know, Google, Waymo, Alphabet has a lot more money to throw after things like this in hopes of a long-term profit.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive correspondent based in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, why some couples are using a credit card to cover the cost of a wedding.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Weddings are pricey, and 1 in 3 couples now use credit cards to help pay. Experts say it can be smart, but only if you're strategic and avoid long-term debt. We welcome in Ted Rossman, industry analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And when my wife and I were planning our wedding 15 years ago, the person at the hotel who was planning our reception said, look, you got to put this on the on a hotel rewards credit card because you can get yourself a suite in a city someplace nice. And we took that advice to heart, and we did get a hotel room in Paris as a result. But of course, we also paid off the credit card in full.
That's a great success story. Yeah, there are really two times when using a credit card for a wedding can make sense. One of them is, as you said, to get the rewards. That could be in the form of a sign-up bonus for a new card. Maybe even your spouse gets one as well, and you double dip. Or maybe you pick categories that really lean into wedding-related expenses, like if your venue codes as dining rewards, or even if you just get a general-purpose travel or cash back card. If you pay in full, rewards are great. The other time is if you want to get a 0% interest credit card and spread out the impact of those expenses that way, just be careful that you pay it off before the clock expires. There are cards, though, like the U.S. Bank Shield Visa that have 24 months interest-free. That could be a nice way to spread out your cash flow.
Now, at the same time, the average cost of a wedding in the U.S. is about to hit $36,000 in 2025. I mean, that is a staggering amount of money.
It is, and you definitely don't want to finance this at 20% interest, which is the average credit card rate. So be really careful about that. It's also worth pointing out that most people don't have $36,000 in available credit, so you're probably not going to be able to put everything on a credit card anyway. Now, maybe if you spread these out over months, you need to consider which vendors take credit cards too. You may not always be able to pay the band or the DJ or the other vendors with a credit card. Some you can. I mean, a lot of times you can pay the venue. Maybe you can pay for the dress or the florist or other things. Think about some of this ahead of time, though. You don't want to max out the credit line. That's really dangerous if you're carrying a balance because it's really expensive. But also, just from a good financial management standpoint, you don't want to max out a card and hurt your credit score. So be strategic is really kind of the bottom line here. If you go in with a plan, if you sign up for the right cards, if you pay them off right away, you can come out ahead. But there are some pitfalls to be aware of.
And we talk about financial stress brought about by carrying too much debt. And the last thing you want to do is start your married life on the wrong financial foot.
That's so true. And a lot of people have credit card debt entering the marriage. And no shame. I mean, half of credit card holders carry debt from month to month. It is a very common thing. It's often caused by practical things like medical bills and car repairs and groceries and everyday expenses. But there is also a school of thought that says don't dig the hole any deeper. So whether that means sticking to debit or cash or even checks, or maybe scaling back some of the wedding plans or just being really cautious, you can come out ahead with this. I mean, if you can get that free honeymoon or if you can get some meaningful cash back, I actually tend to think a 2% no annual fee cash back card is a really great option, because if you spend a lot and you pay it off right away, you're putting hundreds or thousands of dollars back in your pocket. But you do need to be mindful of those interest charges. You want to avoid that if at all possible. Don't max out the card. And also think about which of your wedding expenses can even go on a credit card, because not all these vendors are going to take them.
Ted Rossman, industry analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And a slight sell-off today. I mean, just a fraction of a percent for the three major indices. But is this the sign of a market that in the middle of a week in which there's going to be a lot of news?
Exactly. I think, you know, we are just getting into now the meat of earnings season. And so I think you'll see some of the day-to-day movements really influenced by who's reporting earnings that particular day and who may be on deck for the following day. And so I'm not surprised that you're seeing kind of a nothing market today.
Now, the one thing that we have talked about when discussing the Dow theory is the Dow Jones Transportation Index, especially as it serves as a leading economic indicator. And in the world of transportation, we have a blockbuster merger that was announced today, and that is Union Pacific is going to buy Norfolk Southern in an $85 billion deal that would create the nation's first true transcontinental railroad for the first 150 years. Chuck, after the Golden Spike was driven in Promontory Point, Utah, that transcontinental railroad back in the 1800s connected Omaha and the Pacific Coast. And now you can a freight train can go from coast to coast if the feds give their blessing to this merger. What does this say, though, about the transportation sector? Is this a bullish or a bearish indicator?
Well, at least today, it's the Dow Jones Transportation Average is down almost 2% today. So when I said it was a nothing market, it certainly wasn't a nothing market in transportation stocks. Now, to kind of put that in perspective, the deal that Union Pacific is buying Norfolk Southern is a cash and stock deal. So Norfolk Southern folks will be getting cash and stock in Union Pacific, so, which means that this deal is tied to some extent on what's going on in Union Pacific stock, which is down today. I think the overall, you're seeing not just in transportation, but you're going to see this in financial services. You're going to see it in healthcare. You're going to see it in a lot of industries where I think the merger and acquisition activity is really going to pick up this year, partly due from deregulation, partly due to a perceived dovish view on mergers from the current administration. In the transportation sector, you know, it is only 20 stocks. It's a price-weighted index, which means the highest-priced stocks carry the greatest weight, which is Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern are two big high-priced stocks. You know, I think what this portends is probably further consolidation in the transportation sector. I mean, on deck is going to be CSX with Burlington Northern, and my guess is those two are looking at this and saying, we better get our act together and maybe merge as well. And it'll be interesting to see if you have both of those deals coming before, trade regulators, if they let that through. The other thing here that I think is hurting those stocks, at least today, is, I mean, they're not expecting this deal to close until 2027. And Union Pacific has stopped its stock buybacks probably until 2028. So Norfolk Southern stock had popped up a little bit prior to the official announcement here. So I'm not surprised you're seeing the stocks take a breather today.
And then very quickly, Chuck, what does this mean, though, for the transportation sector as far as costs are concerned, that come 2027, that a shipper can take a rail car from Los Angeles to New York without having to hand it off from the UP to the Norfolk Southern in Chicago?
Yeah, well, that's a big argument for doing this is that it certainly should help their cost structure. And, you know, they're making a huge deal about this is the reindustrialization of America play that, you know, what's going on in America, that the railroads are going to be a very important part of moving product from from coast to coast and doing it in an efficient way. And if that happens, you know, railroad mergers have been difficult in the past to kind of make work. And I think there's some skepticism concerning that with this deal. But if they can, yeah, that should be a boon to the economy.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter in Hammond. Thank you for joining us today.
It's investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Travel Tuesday is sponsored by Pre-Flight Airport Parking. Treating yourself to a Chicago staycation can include a downtown luxury hotel with a great pool, skyline views, and enjoy everything the city offers right here in your own backyard. Welcome in Mark Walters, Walters World Travel and Culture. You can find him on YouTube. You can also find him at the Geese College of Business at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And we're going to flip the script on you, Mark, because normally we talk about, you know, the best bed and breakfasts in Kyrgyzstan. But today we're going to talk about places you can go in Chicago where you can be a tourist in your own town. So what's kind of the first rule of thumb when it comes to planning a staycation?
One of the biggest things I think people miss is they keep thinking back to their times like visiting their hometown or where they live 10 years ago, 15 years ago when they moved in, and they really haven't explored the city again. And that's what's so great about Chicago. There's always new galleries coming up, always new restaurants you need to check out. And you hear about them, but you never go because you go into the city and you're like, oh, I'll go to my old standby, and you miss out. So I think one of the biggest things is just explore the new stuff.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because even if you've moved to the suburbs with your kids and you want to relive your Wrigleyville glory days, you realize that maybe they weren't nearly as fun as you remembered, or they're certainly not child-friendly.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, Chicago has so many great things you can do with your kids that going back and exploring some of those things you enjoyed as a kid when you went to the Museum of Science and Industry or the Art Institute of Chicago, those kind of things going back again later, you're like, wow, I forgot about some of these pieces, some of these things. And that's one of the funny things. I have locals that live up in the Chicagoland area, and they haven't gone. They saw the Christmas trees, maybe 20 years ago. I'm like, yeah, there's more stuff at the Museum of Science and Industry. You can visit other times of the year and see things, and they just get so surprised with all the new stuff that shows up. Because if you haven't been for a while, you really should explore more of these wonderful museums.
And then on top of that, should you treat it, though, like this is a vacation elsewhere, and you can pretend that you are flying there? Because I think with the staycation, there is this temptation that, oh, because you're home, because you're near work, and because you're near all of your responsibilities, you can layer some of that stuff in and still have your staycation, which you wouldn't do if you were going to Orlando or elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big mistakes people make, is they try to still make it like you're at home. That's why it's really great. If you're like in Naperville, Evansville, wherever, and you're coming in to stay in the city, you actually want to stay in the city like a tourist so you can enjoy it. Because if you're going back home, at the end of the day, you're always worried traffic, when I'm going to go back, what train do I need to get. This way you can really focus on enjoying the city the way it's meant to be enjoyed. And you start to see why tourists talk about Chicago very differently sometimes than the locals do, because they start to see the stuff they really love as opposed to like focusing on traffic and the train.
And on top of that, I think the first thing to make that staycation sing, especially if you have kids, is to pick the right hotel. And in some cases, you're not paying for a plane, so why don't you splurge on the room with a view or find a hotel with a really cool pool?
Yeah, and that's the thing that really makes a difference, is putting the money into your stay. And even if you don't have a lot of money to stay, you could look at things like Priceline and other places that have those last-minute deals, thinking, hey, you know what? Let's spend this weekend in Chicago, and you could look up and see some really great deals, so your money goes a bit farther for those last-minute things. So it's not something you really have to plan way, way ahead. Sometimes you can do it really close.
And then on top, we talk about avoiding the temptation to look up some of your old haunts, but at the same time, too, do you want to go to all the touristy places while you're playing tourist, or can you apply some of that unique local knowledge to finding restaurants and finding places to amuse yourself above and beyond the usual museums and cultural institutions?
Well, I think one of the things that's funny is you can do it both ways. And I think sometimes when you go to be a staycation in your hometown, your home city, it gives you kind of like the permission to be the tourist. So you can go and do the tourist things. And sometimes you're like, I don't want to look like a fool, like a tourist when I'm here, but it gives you the permission to do that. So it can be actually kind of a fun thing when you do those silly, over the top tourist things. But knowing your Chicago connections, you can be like, hey, look, my buddy told about this new restaurant. let's go check this out. There's this new gallery we can go check out. There's so many great little art museums around Chicago people never even think about. Like, just go to the University of Chicago, the Hyde Park, go around there. There's so many cool things you can check out there that maybe you haven't seen literally in 20 years, and it's changed so much.
Mark Wolters, Wolters World Travel and Culture. Find him on YouTube. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Join us this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, restaurants, they're having a hard time retaining customers. We'll talk about that next.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago restaurant owners are hitting pause, facing tariff fears and rising costs. Many are shelving expansion plans and choosing caution over growth in an already fragile industry. Joining us to discuss is Doug Roth, founder and president of Playground Hospitality in Chicago. Doug, thank you for joining us today. And we talk about uncertainty as one of the common feelings that many business owners are experiencing as they try to make heads or tails out of the tariff environment and other business factors in the year of 2025. But how does that look in practice?
Well, unfortunately, for a lot of restaurateurs, it's quite a serious thing. You mentioned tariffs, but on top of that, you have operational issues at this point, supply chains, increase in wages, property taxes, rents, and I'll give you one that you probably didn't think of, Ozempic. All of those are having a play right now on the restaurant world, and a very serious way is in that.
And it seems like, I mean, if you are a family who is just trying to put your budget together for the month or the week, you know how much money is coming in based on what you or your spouse is getting paid. And I would imagine restaurant owners do the same when they are setting their business plans up. But there's probably all sorts of stuff that happens over the course of a 30-day business cycle that doesn't really make it into that financial projection on the first day of the month.
Well, good point. I mean, take today. It's going to be a real feel of 100 degrees. A lot of people who normally would sit outdoors are going to be wanting to sit indoors. So there's a play every day. You just don't know exactly what you're going to be headed for. And in our business, you plan for it, but God laughs.
And when we talk about some of the issues that that restaurant owners are facing from a cost perspective, is this the legacy of the Great Resignation, that there were wages and there were bonuses and there were all sorts of practices put into place 4 or 5 years ago just to get people in the door to serve the food to customers or cook the food or clean the tables, and the business environment has changed, however, the floor is still higher?
Well, I think the floor is still higher, and I think that's the result of just increase in what's happened with inflation. I mean, since 2020, you're paying 35% more, and a lot of that has to do with inflationary issues with food and labor, as you speak about as well. The one thing that we haven't talked about is how technology at this point, and we can go in greater details at some other time, is playing a real big role now and replacing a lot of those individuals who are back in kitchens, because that is able to provide really comparable food quality at the same time that someone else who might be preparing something from scratch.
Doug Roth, founder and president, Playground Hospitality in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.